So this morning, we are going to be having a conversation with Justin Sheik, and he did give me a heads up a little bit earlier not to call him Mr. Sheik because that's his dad, but that's fine. He's the managing director of Razor PR, and Dustin is a partner of, or in the MNC Satchi Group South Africa, and also, like I said, the managing director of Razor PR. And he is going to, or this is actually going to be quite an insightful conversation about something that I'm very passionate about. It is a marketing space, and as someone that has been in the industry for so long, I, for one, just want to really learn as much as I can from you. Good morning, Dustin. How are you doing today?
How are you? I'm good.
Yes.
Very well.
Awesome stuff. So if you had to tell us in maybe just what you are expecting to take away from the conference, as much as you are a speaker yourself, and there's so much that you'll be able to share with the rest of the audience and so forth, what are you looking forward to take away from this year's IMC Nedbank conference?
I think it's an eye on the future, actually. I think, you know, marketers and communicators really like to get together to have a conversation. I don't think that's new in itself, but I really love the idea of walking away with a much clearer vision of the world, where it's going, rather than kind of a bit of a paralysis analysis around of where it is. So, you know, you would have seen throughout this year a lot of conversation around things, for example, like artificial intelligence. But where is it actually going? Where are we as an industry starting to define things like the use of AI? And what does that mean in terms of copyright? And what does that mean around original creation and factual checking and ethics and those kind of conversations? And it's when you start to sit together with the brightest minds in us as an industry, it starts to fundamentally change the nature of the conversation. And I want to see a fundamental shift from AI as a trend to here's what we're going to do with it.
Yes, yes.
And it's a rather anecdotal example, but it's quite top of mind, and a lot of people are grappling with this as a question. And I want to see that kind of translate into a lot of the panels. To understand more deeply around the course of travel.
Okay, fantastic. Now, that looks like, actually sounds as if, you know, whoever walks in there, you are going to leave with your cup very full. That is just some of the phrases that I like using, honestly, because I feel that it is important that we learn from other people, especially people who have done it before us and people who have more experience than we do. So maybe just to loosen you up a little bit, this is what I do, just to get to know maybe one or two, three things about Dustin this morning. Do you remember the first interview that you had coming into this industry, and where was it?
Like it was yesterday.
Okay.
And it wasn't into communications, actually. It was into journalism.
Right.
And maybe let me take a step back. I come from a family of engineers. They're all engineers. I often joke that they speak in binary. They only know ones and zeros. And you know, I have a twin sister who is very engineering. You know,
oh, lovely.
Understands black and white, and I understand grey.
In
the world, and I knew I wanted to be a journalist. And I can even remember the day, and this is really to set up my interview, is that I was on holiday with my family in what was then the Northern Transvaal, at a hotel called the Pine Lake Sun, and it was school holidays. I was 15 or 16 years old, to give away my age. And it was the day that Chris Hani was assassinated. And I remember the entire hotel gathered in the dining room around one of those really old box TVs, watching history unfold in front of them. And I remember looking at my father and saying to him, those journalists are asking the wrong questions. They should be asking, and I listed off a whole bunch of questions that I believed that they should be asking. And then it kind of set me on a course that I wanted to do journalism. I wanted to be asking the right questions. And I went to university, and I had to complete a practical kind of course as part of my graduation requirement. And like a whole bunch of other people in my class, we all sent off our CVs. And I sent mine to Talk Radio 702. And I knew that if I wanted to be a journalist, that there was only one newsroom that I wanted to be a journalist in, and that was Eyewitness News. The head of news at Eyewitness News at that time was a man by the name of Jeremy Maggs. And I faxed my CV, just again to flash back to my age.
And you know what? This is not even a factor, because he's very young. He's got good skin, so it's okay.
And the And I carried on with my day. And I came in from university one day, and my mom said to me, Jeremy, my ex phoned you. And I said, really? So she said, yes, you need to phone him back.
Mm.
And I phoned him, and my first thought was, wow, he sounds a lot like Jeremy Maggs. And he said, well, when can I come and see him? I said, well, 30 minutes. And he said, cool, I'll see you in 30 minutes.
Mm.
I've been in the 702 building. It was the old 135 Ravonia Row building, for those of you that know Johannesburg. It's where the big Nedbank building is these days. They actually knocked it down, built the Nedbank building. And I sat in his office and so nervous. And he looked at me, really kind of pondering look on his face. And he said to me, do you want to be famous? And I thought, well, if that isn't the most ultimate trick question, then I just don't know what. And I thought, well, I have zero to lose. So I said, yes, absolutely, I do. So he said, wonderful, you can start on Saturday. And I did.
Mm.
And I said to him, Jeremy, why weird interview? He said, oh, yeah, there were no spelling mistakes on your CV. That was my first interview. And there followed a little bit of a very short career in journalism and a bit of a leap into comms. And then the rest is history.
All right. So if you had to probably go back a little bit into time as well and really just tell us some of the great bosses that you've worked with and people who have really shaped your career, regardless of the different spaces that you've been in, what are some of those things that you still carry with you?
There are two standout bosses in my... the one is actually my current boss.
Okay.
And the other one was a friend of mine now called Amanda Singleton. And she was one of the most senior communicators in South Africa. And I would say that a good 60 to 70% of the things that I learned about strategic comms and the way strategic comms comes from her, but also around things around resilience and emotional intelligence and those kind of things around understanding our role as communicators, but just sort of having a little bit more of a deeper contact with yourself as a person in the role that you perform. Mm. And she now lives in New Zealand, and she'd probably be horrified to hear that I was now quoting her in this interview, so maybe I should keep her hands up. And often she is still a voice in my head. At least once or twice a week, in how things go. The other person is my current boss, and it's a man by the name of Mike Abel. And Mike is the executive chairman of the MNC Saatchi Group here in South Africa. He also leads the Africa region for the MNC Saatchi Group PLC, and he is also the head of global product for the PLC. And there are two significant lessons that I learn every day from Mike, actually. The one is around the power of your values and why they matter really more than anything else. And the bravery that it comes with expressing your values. And don't get me wrong, this is not just a hairy-fairy values conversation. This plays directly to the topic of reputation.
True.
And so the first one is around the power of values. And the second one is that behavior is truth. And you only have to watch people's behavior to truly understand what to expect from them.
Come on.
And that's true in your professional life and your personal life. And it's really quite a liberating concept, because it doesn't really mean you must be like Judge Dredd and judge everybody's behavior, but it does mean sometimes we have expectations that we are only setting ourselves up to have when all you need to do is watch a behavior of somebody. So think about both of those concepts in the world of reputation management. So the first one is the power of values.
Mm-hmm.
Organizations that lack value or values don't need a communication solve to their problems. They have a leadership crisis and a values crisis, and they have to scratch the right itch. And that then obviously goes into much deeper debates around, do they want to or don't they want to, do they have the appetite, should they have the appetite. We can have an entire discussion just on that. It's a topic. The other one is around behavior is truth, and that is important to understand that you will never communicate yourself into a reputation. you'll only behave yourself there. And equally, you can't communicate yourself out of a reputation. You can only behave yourself out of a reputation. I don't have a magic wand in my pocket that says, wow, ta-da, everybody now thinks differently no matter how you behave. Because if you behave poorly, you pollute rivers, you treat your staff badly, you pay below the minimum wage, none of the strategic comms in the world is going to make your staff earn more, clean up the river, or pay above minimum wage. It's not, they're not related to each other. And I guess what I walk away with is something that I deeply respect and understand at my own values level, but that I also equally understand has a direct bearing on the job that we do every day.
Oh, wow. Okay. So I was actually, as you're talking, I'm obviously taking in a lot right now. First things first, we have something in common. I have twin boys. And yeah, they're 4 years old, so they're still in the stage of just driving me crazy. Last week, the one decided, Aiden, I don't know, he was mad about something and then he broke the TV. Now I need, okay, well, you know, insurance cleared the claim, but still, he broke the TV, you know. So it's actually, that was actually quite interesting for me to hear. But also, the reason I asked you to also just really maybe just think about or reflect on the very people who have, you know, shaped your career in one way or another is because when I came into the marketing industry, for example, even though I'm on radio right now, I started off as a media buyer. And I was actually mentored and coached by a man called Yaku Kleinsmith, and he's the head of marketing for Trusco here in Namibia. But I will always mention his name in spaces because of all the great values and just things that he has actually poured into my career. But to get right into some other questions as well, can you maybe just break down for us or to the listener who's listening right now, how long have you been in this very, someone described it as a colorful industry.
Colorful indeed. Wow, probably too long. No, I've been in the industry for going on 20 plus years.
Okay.
20 years. I haven't actually worked out the exact number. Jokes aside, I love it.
Okay.
I love the ability to say, hey, mom, look what I did at school today. I think that's quite rewarding. I love, as much as it drives us all absolutely mad, the fact that nothing is the same. I love the people, the clients, the opportunity just to sit in a meeting and say things like, hey, what about if we did this? And then the client says, oh, I love that idea. And then you watch this thing get birthed. I mean, who doesn't want that kind of job satisfaction?
Exactly. Like,
accounting numbers every day.
Yeah, and no, not that. That's too much of a headache. Like,
you know, but the I guess it's just there's a bit of magic, actually.
All right. So if you had to tell us why you think you have lasted for as long as you have, apart from being dedicated, hardworking, and all of that in this industry, what truly fulfills you and motivates you about the space?
I believe communications can change the world. And yes, sometimes it can be a bit flighty. You know, it gets a bit about influencers on yachts in Dubai on Instagram. It's not really changing anything, but the reality, and maybe it's the kind of work that we predominantly do, but it is understanding that it can change the world. Think in practical ways. We would do some work for the biggest food producer on the African continent is Tiger Brands, and we've been managing a nutrition program for them going on 4 years now.
Okay.
And the premise of the work, not campaign because it's a lot more than a campaign, is around helping people make better food choices on any budget. We commenced the work with a full qualitative and quantitative research study of nutrition behaviors of South Africans. Understanding that this was just as the pandemic happened and we all went into lockdown. It was the first study of its type and size that had been done in South Africa on the nutrition profile of South Africans since 2012. So going on all and translating that into diets and meal plans and issues around reading labeling on food packaging and understanding control and telling people what's in their pantry and giving them recipes that make them cook high nutrition meals, but not necessarily breaking the bank. what at a functional face value level of a campaign like that is you see a beautiful campaign. Fundamentally, you are changing people's lives. And even if you change only one person's attitude towards the portion control and how they eat meals and all of those kind of things, and you make them healthier, then you have changed the world. And I adore that I have that in my job. And I can take examples of that from across our client portfolio, where the work we do must be meaningful, must be impactful, must be deeply strategic and deeply creative and all of those wonderful things. But at its heart, remember that word values, it has a values-driven element to it, where we can express our own values, but also that the people who benefit from those comms walk away with value as a result of it. And I think that's an immensely powerful thing to get you up every day to motivate you.
No, that's actually really profound, because the good thing is also when you have an impact, when you make an impact in someone's life, for the most part, it doesn't stay just with that person, you know. So whatever it is that they take from you goes on to other people as well. So being in this space for as long as you have, what would you say in your experience are the key factors in building a sustainable brand in Africa? Because obviously you have all this experience, and I'm reverting back to it because, man, you really have to be passionate about the industry to be in it for as long as you have. But you've learned and experienced so much on your way as well. How you started is not where the industry is right now. So what would those some of those key factors be?
Would you say that's a personal brand or a company or product brand?
It really doesn't matter, hey, whether maybe you can touch on just personal and then maybe just two more and just a company brand.
But a personal brand, I think it's around a vision for yourself and probably a large dose of resilience. And I think it speaks to what I said earlier, your behavior is your truth. That's how you're going to build that brand.
True.
You're going to deliver consistently at high quality work. You're always going to go above and beyond the brief. You're going to be a strategic partner and advisor to your client, not just a pair of hands in the room delivering the output. And you will build a brand. Probably that comes with a large dose of patience. We can have a whole chat around different generations and their approach to work, but probably missing from the younger generations is patience. It's doing the time and doing the hard yards to be able to get it. And it's not because there's not technical skill. Absolutely there is. There's a little bit of sometimes lacking of emotional skill, especially when there is a lot coming at you at one time. But actually, you need to have had some time to make a couple of mistakes because they're better. Often when I interview people, I don't ask them about what they've achieved. I ask them where they failed. And because it's a very telling around how they're going to respond to failure, not how they're going to respond to success. Tell me how well you did about something. Equally, I think the same value applies to building a brand. And that brand could be a leader's brand and a CEO, or it could be a corporate brand, or it could be a product or a service, is patience, resilience. So where does resilience play out? I was quoted a while ago in responding to a story around Woolworths and a rat that was in their store. And the reality is Woolworths will never write a 140 character tweet that will take the rat out of the store. They don't have that kind of juju. Okay, not one communicator we know has that kind of juju. And if we did, we would be running the planet.
True.
I mean, most of us think we do, but that's just But the reality of that is that there's a patience and a resilience and understanding that not everything's a crisis and not everything is, oh my God, and we need a meeting and get thousands of people in the room to come to consensus. And sometimes you just have to walk it off, as my kids would say. And then with that, having a vision for yourself and a plan to deliver on it. And then have made some mistakes and tested and learned and actually righted yourself out of those mistakes to emerge better, more confident, more authentic, more real, all of those kind of things. So there's very little difference in the theory between building your own personal brand and building, a corporate brand.
Corporate brand, yeah.
And maybe I sound at the risk of sounding like I'm repeating myself. It goes back to that behavior is your truth.
Your truth, yes. I'm definitely taking that one with me.
And that's why it's such a powerful learning, because it really is so pervasive.
Yeah. So I'm going to throw this ball back at you. How have you failed, Dustin, in your career, and how have you rose from that?
So, to give you a little bit of insight into my world.
Okay.
As part of our leadership development programs, a lot of us have coaches. And my coach tells me a lot that I am very quick to put up my hand to say that I'll do it and do it all myself. And I have almost no self-preservation in the process. And actually, that's probably been one of my greatest personal failures, where I've had to learn that I can't be available for everything. And then I've made it known that I am. So now I have to write a whole bunch of personal and operational behaviors behind being available for everything. So I think that's something that I think you work on all the time, because I'm still going to be an A-type and I'm still going to say, give it to me, I'll get it done.
I'll get it done, yeah.
And, you know, people in marketing, they go, give it to me, I'll get it done.
Yes.
And so that's kind of maybe a bit of a personal one. I think at a professional one, I worked on a parastatal brand about 12 or 13 years ago. It was a state-owned enterprise. Now, we all know what state-owned enterprises in South Africa look and feel like. I don't know about Namibia. And
don't get us started.
Makes sense. And I had a CEO who had been accused of mismanagement, to put it mildly. And you know, you would like to believe people when they tell you things. And maybe my first mistake was a large dose of naivety. And so I, as part of the comms of managing our response to this program, arranged to take out a full page ad in the Sunday Times to lay out her argument in a bit of an open letter. And it seemed like a smart strategic and tactical move and all of those. And nothing ever negatively came of it, so it was maybe a lucky save. Talk about it now because it's been so long. But that day stuck with me because it dawned on me driving to work on that Monday morning that I had used public funds to take out an advert to defend a criminal. I mean, she was never found guilty, but that was the conversation that played out in
your
head. And it really haunted me, actually, because I had, you know, go back to values, that I thought to myself, oh my God, what have you done? That's horrendous, you know. And then you kind of put your head in your sand because you're young and a little bit immature and quite naive.
And still trying to build your career.
And all of that. But from that day onwards, I will never make that mistake again. I'll never make that mistake at two levels. The first one will be that I probably wouldn't be in the meeting, having the meeting with the client, because I would say our values don't align, so I'm really not the partner for you. And the second one is that I would be a little bit smarter about spending public funds in the process.
Yeah. Something to learn from, hey? So you have worked on obviously so many brands and so forth, and you've represented them in so many different ways. But if Dustin himself had to be a brand, what would your slogan be?
Oh my God, I hate this question.
Why?
let's go with the theme. Behavior is your truth.
All right.
So there's my slogan.
Yeah.
Don't know what kind of brand I would be.
Think about it, maybe in your own time as well.
I'd want to be a little bit of a mixture between Apple. Seems like a cheesy choice. It's well put together.
What type of apples, though?
I appreciate them for their entire thought process behind their product.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't want need to be rebooting as often, but like...
Oh, wait, you said Apple. Why am I hearing apples? Okay, Apple. Got it.
and probably a combination of Apple and I'm trying to think of a brand with heritage, with proof, like a bit of skin in the game for an extended period of time. So a brand with a standard kind of period in time. So innovative, market leading, well put together, quality, smart, excellent use of customer orientation.
With innovation.
Things with a payoff line that says your behavior is your truth.
Is your truth. Got it. All right. So having been in this space where you've also experienced a lot of, I'm pretty sure that you've struggled with imposter syndrome in your career as well. How have you handled that, especially with the positions that you've had and seeing what other brands are doing in the industry, in the market? How have you handled imposter syndrome? Because I can promise you right now, even people who are entry level into this space would love to hear how someone in your position has handled it.
You know what? It sounds silly, but it was making peace with the fact that everybody has it and that you're not alone. I thought that was quite a profound kind of aha moment that everybody worries that they are faking it through their job.
Mm-hmm.
And with that was just realizing that there are good days and bad days. And on the whole, actually, you're pretty good at your job. And I guess it's a little bit of that little engine that could, you know, I think the internal narrative that you give yourself has more power than we're willing to admit. And you have the cognitive ability to actually influence that narrative. And you can choose to, or you can choose not to.
Not to, yeah.
And then to me, it's, you know, I put on my strategist hat. I'm like, well, then I choose to, because strategy is a choice. And actually do that. And then a bit of a smile every once in a while in a meeting when I realize, oh, other people also get it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, one of our culture values it raises this idea of bravery, just doing it. And when you remember that actually I'm chasing a value and it's bravery, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
It's going to be a little bit of a imposter syndrome because I'm taking myself out of my comfort zone, and that's okay.
That's okay. Yes. They say that's where the growth is most of the time. Hey, so you are a speaker at the IMC Nedbank conference. I'm excited about this one, actually. But if you had to tell us in a couple of words just what you are most excited about in terms of the conference, have you actually spoken at the conference before? Is it your first?
This is my first time at the IMC. I have spoken at conferences before.
Yes, yes.
This is my first time as a speaker at the IMC, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to it for two reasons, actually. The one is being there and being a speaker, naturally. But also, I'm excited for who's joining me on my panel. You know, Sarun, who's the editor-in-chief of Provoke, which is the world's biggest public relations magazine publication, mm-hmm. and Shay, who's the CEO of an agency that I honestly have envy for.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about imposter syndrome. I'm like, oh God, I wish I was them. And she's just also a good friend of mine and a phenomenal human being. But I look at them and I think this is going to be an amazing conversation because you're bringing together the two, and maybe this is a bit of a soft serving comment, but the two agencies in the world to watch, with the most influential editor in the space, in a facilitated panel conversation about the future. I'd want to watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
And having conversations even this morning with Shayoni around the content and, you know, what are we going to do and all of those kind of things makes me excited. Also tells me that I may be not writing my presentation.
Yes. We were going to get to that, though. Maybe just a sneak peek. Okay, well, you haven't gotten started yet, but also maybe for someone who's going to be in the audience like myself as well, what would you want us to walk away, regardless of whether you started the speech or not?
We've actually commissioned some research between Lynn and Razor, we will begin rolling out, which is around understanding CEO activism. And we're actually going to release a white paper as part of this.
Okay.
And it's an increasingly interesting topic. But if you did a Google on CEO activism, you wouldn't find very much. And it goes back to, again, that behavior is truth narrative. In a world where political leaders are a little bit wanting. Most societies are in a bit of a leadership vacuum. You hear this theme about a lack of leadership coming up in all parts of society, not in just South Africa or Namibia or the UK, the US. Russia, and all of those kind of places. And there's this kind of heightened expectation on company leaders to effectively fill the moral void that the state has failed to deliver on. Its most academic way of putting it is the issue at play. And then this balancing act for CEOs who need to run and sustain the future of their businesses at a human level to pay the salaries of the people that work there, versus the moral obligation for them to stand up and say, this is not okay, and to draw a line in the sand. Mm-hmm. And often the hardest thing to say is, how will history judge either one of those two decisions? Did I or didn't I? And I guess it's going to come down to the individual character and I guess braveness of the chief executive concerned. But understanding more and more in this modern world, what do we expect CEOs to do and what do they think? I'm really excited to see the outcome of that research, because maybe the secret, not so secret activist in me wants them to stand up and say, stand out there and shout from the rooftops that it's not okay. Versus, you know, there's a very well-known activist in South Africa who leads an organization called Outer, which was instrumental in opposition to tolling and all of that kind of stuff on roads, and focus a lot on tax abuse right now.
Mm-hmm.
And he years ago in speaking with him, he made a comment that was that many businesses have effectively tendered themselves into a position of no longer having an opinion. And that's quite sad, actually.
It really, really is. And that was quite a movement, hey? So, Dustin, sure. So I just don't really want to take too much of your time because we understand you're very busy. But maybe just parting ways right now. There are so many people who are going to come after you, especially people who are very excited to see you speak at the conference as well. What would you tell them? Something that was probably just told to you in terms of believing in yourself to really pursue the dreams that you have for yourself, even if, you know, some people will feel like, you know, this industry, I'm not even sure if it can actually sustain your life. But to anyone who wants to actually enter this space, what parting words or inspirational words right now would you leave with them?
If you want to change the world, maybe a career in commerce will do it.
That's one. And you said behavior is? What was your slogan? Yes, behavior is your truth. Yes.
Yeah, your is your truth.
Yes. Okay, we'll keep that one very close to us. Thank you so much for your time, Dustin, and have a fantastic day. We're excited about the conference, and get working on that speech. Awesome. Have a lovely day, hey?